Okay. My name is Robin Pierce, working in conjunction with the Reuther Library at Wayne State University. Today's date is November 24th, 2020. This interview is of Joy Feeney about the effects of COVID on her ability to work. The interview will go into detail about her job as a digital communications specialist, both before and after the shelter in place was ordered. Joy lives in Midland, Michigan. This interview will be recorded remotely and will be housed at the Reuther Library, which is part of Wayne State University. The Reuther Library will keep administrative information about this oral history project, such as interview releases and deeds of gift, in its case files. Case files are in a locked, non-public area of the building, accessible only to the Reuther Library staff. In the event of a criminal investigation or legal discovery proceedings, the Reuther Library could be compelled to turn over holdings and case files that are otherwise closed to the public, including the case files for this oral history project. So good morning, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for interviewing me.
Yeah, I always ask first, do you have any affiliation with Wayne State University?
No, I don't.
Okay. Could you give us a baseline of what a digital communications specialist is?
In my role, I work with the website and our internal intranet site to push out communications and to kind of inform the public of what's going on, push out PR stories, and provide educational materials to our internal staff. That's pretty much my role at my hospital organization.
So can you walk me through a day of work for you prior to COVID?
Sure. Generally, I would have updates to make regarding possible physician information. We put out, a directory of our physicians that are employed by the hospital and our affiliates, and usually those have updates on a regular basis. I would possibly put out blogs or news stories, and our internal communications, I might add some of our events that come up or some of the things that maybe for the upcoming week that we are doing. I may put out some information about, any changes or updates to policies or procedures, those types of things are kind of what I would work with. And then if we have any kind of upcoming larger event, I might put out information about that as well.
So do you work in an office or a cubicle setting?
I work in an office. I am located off of the main hospital building. We have a secondary site that we share with our visiting nurses and our prosthetics and bionics group. We're in the same building, just different floors. So I'm with the marketing team and planning and business development for the hospital.
So then March 13th, 14th timeframe, the state shut down. So were you continuing to go into work at that point?
We started noticing things changing. A lot more information started going out around the 6th of March is when we kind of saw something happening, realized that, yeah, we may be getting shut down. My last day in the office was that Wednesday. I think that was the 10th, I want to say. The Wednesday before that, 13th, was my last day in the physical office. And I've been pretty much remote ever since. There's been a few meetings, especially during the summer, when our numbers were reasonable, that I would go in for a meeting or two, but that's about it. It's been remote the rest of the time. And my organization encouraged that anybody who is not clinical staff that's needed, they wanted to keep everyone safe, and having people work remotely when possible, just helped with that. So they're really great about, you know, allowing us to not be another person around that.
Yeah. Did you have to take anything home with you from your office setting to work at home?
The, like their laptop and things like that. I'm using their laptop, and that's mostly all I need for my position. Everything I do is online. So that's pretty much all I need. But there was a lot of moving plants around, things like that. Just, you know, you have your office, you think you might be coming back in, you know, 2 weeks after the, you know, after it's lifted, you may be coming back in 2 weeks and things like that. But it's been a lot longer than 2 weeks. So, you know, just taking care of those things, like the office plants and, you know, moving things around before we left. That was part of, you know, part of going in there that last day. And there's still some people in my department that do go in on a regular basis, just being involved with PR and, you know, communications. There's several people who do still continue to go in. My manager and our department leader are definitely in on a regular basis still.
Yeah. So school shut down too about the same time. How did that look for your family?
Yes, the school shut down. I have a daughter who is 9 years old and she is in fourth grade now. She was in third grade then. And they started a virtual, you know, kind of a virtual classroom a couple weeks after the shutdown. We luckily had the shutdown very close to spring break, so that helped to give the teachers a little bit of time to prepare for some things. But again, they thought it was going to be like just a 2 week thing and they'd be back to normal. And so they're kind of thrown into, you know, a different setting for learning. And she was able to do some work online and ended up completing that school year. And now she's in fourth grade. Her dad was a great help. He was available. He works at the schools as well. So with school shut down, he was available to kind of help her through that process and be there while she was doing, you know, schoolwork and take care of her while I was busy doing my communications work.
So do you have a space dedicated that you can go to in your house to work?
When it first started, I was just in the living room on the couch, you know, with my laptop, and I was kind of working away. I had a TV in there to keep, you know, something in the background. And, you know, I was able to just kind of be at the center of the house and I'd see people as they walked by and things like that. But now I have a more dedicated office space.
Yeah.
With desk and chairs and things like that. It was very difficult to find extra desks and chairs, shopping and things like that. There was a bizarre run on items like that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Couches was one of them, like furniture and office things, and obviously the toilet paper shortage. Yeah. Just kind of bizarre things that you wouldn't expect to be flying off the shelves.
Yeah, we had a hard time finding a desk too.
Yeah, I was surprised, but I suppose all the students that were going virtual and all of the, you know, people who could work from home remotely needed something. So yeah, we were lucky and found a few. But
that's good. So this school year compared to last school year, how was that?
This school year, I think they are more prepared. The students are more prepared as far as learning virtually. We decided that it would be best for my daughter to work remotely for this year. It just made more sense than to have her go into school, and then if anything happened, be switching back and forth. That didn't seem like a great solution for us, as far as just, you know, having something consistent for her to do and to know what to expect every day. So she does that virtually, and that's worked out very well for us. She's gotten to the routine, and so she knows when she's supposed to be in class and working on assignments and those types of things. So that's worked very well. Her dad does, well, until just recently with the newest kind of shutdown, he was going into work for a few hours every day at least, and sometimes he would substitute teach if they needed it. So I was home working remotely, and then she could stay and work on her, you know, on her schoolwork too. And he would go in for a little while and help out, you know, with that.
So they offered you, what kind of in-person school did they offer you?
In our school district, they had in-person, you know, face-to-face school. I believe it was all week long. They have school in session. Our recent order that was just last week, I believe it was. Yeah. Now it's all 100% virtual again, just because our numbers are much higher now than they were in the springtime.
So. Yeah. Has the school given you guys any indication of being able to go back virtual or remote before the end of the year?
Well, the next semester is when they're going to kind of make that decision. The remaining part of this semester is going to be all virtual. And then I'm going to guess that probably the week before school starts back up in January, they'll make a determination on how things are going. A lot can change between now and then, so we'll see how the holidays impact the numbers.
Yeah, I'm waiting too. So you're still working at home, right?
Yep.
Is it easier to work at home now than it was at first?
I would say yes. At first it was so unknown. Everything was new. All this communication was just coming down the pipeline and needed to get out. That was the hard part about early spring. My work, like, I would get information all hours of the day that needed to go out. It was very important for, you know, education for the nursing staff, or when a, you know, policy changed, those types of things. It was very important that that information got out so that people were taking the proper precautions, doing the things safely, and as we learned more, things would change. So that was a continual thing in the springtime. I was working very long hours, 7 days a week, with no real end in sight for quite a long time. All new pages for the website and for our intranet needed to be created, and creative thinking as far as how to also, like, thank the medical staff and, you know, show them support and show them all the love that's going on outside. Kind of bringing that into them as best as, you know, best we could. That type of stuff just took time. And now compared to then, I feel like we have a better grasp on what the disease is, what's going on. We kind of have at least a baseline of, you know, where we were before. And now, as procedures have gotten better and we've gotten more used to how things need to happen to stay safe, there's a lot less, updating, I guess, for me to do. So I feel like I'm spending less time doing that than than before, which is very nice for me because I can kind of expect maybe an update once a day. Our numbers, we post internally, we post our numbers of like inpatient and how many people have been tested, positive, negative, those types of things get posted internally every day. So usually I can expect at least, you know, one or two updates a day, and then possibly some education to put out. But as far as my workload, that is reduced for the COVID management things.
So is your day more like it was, like your hours, is it more like it was before COVID now?
I would say so. At least the time I spent occasionally, well, especially now with, again, things are ramping up. So I may get the numbers, for instance, to post in the morning, like 7 a.m. Those reports come to me to post. I post those in the morning, and then usually we'll have some kind of update message for our full house, is what we kind of call it. And those will come in, you know, maybe 7 or 8 p.m. Or possibly later, depending on what type of information is needing to go out. They have set up an incident command center. So every day there is a group of leadership and departments that meet every single day, and they, you know, go over that information. One of our issues right now is staffing. It's very difficult to find like nursing staff. It's very difficult to find some of the specific types of nurses that are able to do critical care or emergency care. And so they're working through things like that, you know, how to recruit people or to bring people in, just to give our staff that have been here a while and have been working for months and are getting you know, burnt out with the workload and having to have really long hours because there's not, you know, the support needed. They're trying to work through those things. We're bringing in different people from other areas that have clinical experience to kind of balance things. But I think I went down a rabbit hole here.
That's okay. But sounds good.
It's you know, it's they're doing a lot to try and help support our staff and to you know, try to manage what's in the amount of patients that we're seeing, and you know, still trying to keep everybody safe. But they're going back to disinfection standards with the UV lights and things like to help, you know, reduce our use of PPE and those types of things too.
So do you work like 9 to 5, or do you work a little bit in the morning and then a little bit when the next communication comes out? And
I try to work from 9 to 5, or well, like 8 to 5 usually. And then if I need to hop on later on, I check my email kind of consistently throughout day and night until I go to sleep, just to check and see if anything new has come through. And generally it's 9 to 5 or maybe a little bit after, but if there's something that comes through in the evening, then I am able to post that or put that out.
Yeah. So you get,
we've had a few 11 o'clocks lately.
Oh no. You get all the updates, so you're like on top of what's going on in your area as far as COVID is concerned, right?
Yes. I see daily what, you know, like how, what our situation is as far as how many patients we have in-house and how many have been sent home, how many, you know, ventilator issues we've had or ICU incidents, those types of things, how many people have passed away in the 24-hour period. It's every day those numbers come in, and we share quite a few of them internally, just so people know and understand what's going on in those units and kind of what our situation is. Currently, our patient population is about 50% COVID positive. The news just reported recently that our hospital has the highest amount of cases, over 200, so in-house. We have quite a few people. We're managing it. It's some of our departments are full, obviously, like our emergency care and our critical care ICU are relatively full. It's kind of a juggling act when we do get new patients in who need those services. We've stopped the traffic coming in from emergency, you know, services, and we have restricted transfers from other hospitals just to maintain the quality of care that you know, we need to provide instead of having a complete overload. I mean, we're full, we're pretty full, but we want to still provide good quality care to the patients that we have. So that's something that they're taking into consideration right now.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, what things are appropriate to share with the public, for instance, and internally is a different story. We've got over 2,000 employees that work in the hospital or at our other locations. Covenant does have, you know, primary care offices and specialty care and things like that too. But as a system, you know, we're one of the largest employers in the area. And so that information, when we share it, that's quite a chunk of people who know kind of the situation that we're in. But it's, again, it's kind of day to day. It just depends on how the public is responding with, you know, their precautions and taking precautions to protect themselves and others around them. So,
are you glad that you're getting updates like that? Like, are you glad that you know all that information?
I would say yes and no. When it's good, I love to know. You know, I love to hear when it's great. Earlier in the summertime, we were down to single digits, which was fantastic. You know, I was excited because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. This is, you know, we're hopefully we're going to be done with this. Maybe we'll get down to zero. That did not happen. You know, school started up and we've got all these other gatherings in the fall that just happen. And I think people are getting tired of, you know, staying away, not interacting with other people. And it's mentally, it's difficult to stay away from people and not be able to be face to face and hugging your, you know, grandma or things like that. It's really difficult. And so I mean, I do like knowing, but again, it's like when our numbers start going up, it gets kind of, you know, scary again. I kind of stop reading social media, those types of things, just because there's so much incorrect information out there, I would say.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's people who don't believe it, or, you know, they haven't been personally impacted, so it's not real to them. But
yeah,
that's kind of the challenge is, you know, that conflicting information. I can say it all day, like, be careful, please, you know, just do everything you can to protect yourself and to, you know, protect your family and others. Follow the rules, follow the masking and the washing hands and sanitizing, you know, sanitizer and things like that. But you know, everybody's going to do their own thing. So
yeah.
We put a lot of trust in other people in this instance. And that part kind of scares me too, but you know, cause I can do whatever I can, but then the next person in line at the grocery store, you know, who knows? So,
yeah. Yeah, I had to stop watching the social media about it too, because like you said, the conflicting information, and it's very volatile, the extremes that people are experiencing or understanding or believing. And I just can't, I don't know. I think if I was to get information about it, I'd rather get information that was like you're getting, true information, instead of hearsay and happenstance. Yeah.
So. Absolutely. And I mean, I could get into keyboard wars all day if that was my personality. I could do that all day long. And at some point, I'm just, yeah, I just got to stop looking at it. I'm the type who would love to say something, but don't feel comfortable, you know, doing things like that. So that's one of the issues that is troublesome right now. But I do trust the information that I'm getting, and I know my PR people are genuine, and I trust the things that they put out there. They do not put out false information. So it's good. It's good to know, like, kind of the true situation of things.
So in May, I think it was the 21st that probably the 19th, 2021st, when the Sanford Dam breached and the previous dam broke, and then Midland kind of got flooded. How did that affect the hospital situation?
I know that my personal property did not get flood damage. We did have reached on the 21st. We kind of saw it coming. It was, you know, the water was up to the edge. It was, kind of imminent for both. It was each dam and the sand dam.
Oh, that's right.
Breached. And it was a lot of water all in those areas. So I live in Midland, and Sanford is just maybe 15 miles tops from where I personally live. And Sanford was underwater. It was completely, the whole area was just, it was devastated by the flooding. Some of the areas up further, like Wixom Lake is off of, I believe, the Edenville Dam, and that broke first. Those areas, I don't think were as hard with flooding, just because the water was traveling in the opposite direction. You know, that Wixom Lake got drained, but the housing, you know, it's got a hole there now, a crater where the lake was, but Sanford definitely got dumped on, and the downtown Midland area got hit very hard with the impact from all that water as well. And that traveled all the way down the Tittabawassee into Saginaw. Areas of Freeland was underwater, quite a bit of that near the river, and that goes all the way into Saginaw. The hospital in Saginaw was not really impacted too much, other than, we were trying to kind of maintain our situation in the hospital and also help support our community. So, you know, we had food drives and clothing drives and things like that going on at the hospital to help out our local community. Midland, for instance, I know the Mid-Michigan Hospital did get some water damage from the flooding. That location is relatively close to the river, and so I think they had some flooding in the basement, those types of things to take care of. But I think we were all concerned, because at that time it was very, people were talking about masking. We were wearing masks at that time, social distancing. And in Sanford, how can you, how can you clean up after a mess like that and not be, close to someone? How can you feed a family who lost everything and not be close to them? So there was a lot of really great things that happened afterwards to help support those people who really, they were just displaced. Their whole homes were destroyed. And even just up until this last week, one of my former coworkers from Northwood was doing a hot meal every Tuesday. They were delivering it out to families who had lost their homes, and you know, they were living in their maybe camper trailers, those types of things, rebuilding. A lot more of the homes are rebuilt now than just things like that. There was a lot of good that came out of the community to support those folks and help clean up. I know they had a lot of that stuff cleaned up next week, and we're starting to rebuild. That's kind of their, they're a very strong town, and they rallied and got a lot of that cleaned up and taken care of, and, you know, found people places to stay and eat, you know, meals to eat, those types of things. It was really kind of a good things happened out of something terrible. You know, people really came together as a community during that time. But I cannot remember whether that impacted like our numbers at all as far as COVID went. At that time, we still had kind of a low population in the community that had it. Compared to now, which we have a lot more, people out in the community who have been exposed and who have tested positive. So now, like, if that were to happen now, I think it would be a very different situation.
Yeah.
We would have much higher numbers, but that's just, again, my kind of speculation from what I hear, on a daily basis. But, as far as the flooding, it was, it was probably once in the 500 years, you know, that would ever happen. We had just recovered 2 years prior. I think it was, no, three, excuse me, 3 years prior. We had we had just had a substantial flood 3 years prior to where most of those homes and things had some kind of damage, water damage. And then, this is like 3 years later, and then we have this huge, huge flood from the dams breaking. That was the catalyst for everything, was the dams breaking.
Yeah. So the hospital that you work at is in Saginaw or Midland?
I work in Saginaw. Yep. The hospital is in Saginaw.
So if they give you the opportunity to stay remote forever and ever, because you're doing everything that you need to do in your home setting that you would need to do in the office setting, would you take that opportunity?
It has been really nice to be able to kind of interact with my family more and to be around like my animals and things like that, I would say. It had that part of it has been nice. To just be available. I've saved a lot in gas money, you know, those types of things are really benefits. But I do miss my team, because my team is wonderful. We have regular meetings and things like that. And it's great to just get together and, interact with people again. That's the hard part, I think, is virtual. You can only interact so much. It's kind of, you click the button and it's, everybody disappears. But I would be happy with a healthy mix. The few times that I have gone in, I've really enjoyed being back kind of in that setting. I do have a better setup at work. The equipment and things like that. I've got, several monitors to view and more space to kind of call my own and things like that. So that portion of it definitely is, a lot. I don't know if it's better, but it's nice to have that space to kind of spread out and to see everything. on the monitors and things like that. My setup is better there,
yeah,
for sure too. I do miss my team.
I bet.
So really do.
When you do go in on occasion, like you mentioned, what do you have to go through to get in? And then what kind of things do you have to, like PPE, do you have to have on while you're there?
Okay. Well, my position, like I said, is I am not in the hospital building.
Right.
We have a different location that I'm in. So our precautions are a little bit less than it would be to be in, you know, to go into one of the medical facilities. When we have badge entry only, so anybody the right, you know, can enter our building. And then we have sanitation station right there when you first walk in. So the expectation is to, you know, sanitize your hands and things like that. I'm on the third floor, so I go up to the third floor, and then I need to sign in with a screening questionnaire. We have, you know, we need to record when we are there. And then there are screening questions such as, you know, have you been coughing or sneezing or anything like that in the last, you know, in the recent days prior to coming in? And there's also a question about, like, you know, if you've had a fever or a temperature in the last couple of days, if, you know, if you're symptomatic pretty much, ideal for that. We do, all of the buildings require face masks. All of us have been issued cloth face masks. Our community came out and donated thousands of homemade, you know, home sewn masks. Each one of those was inspected and, you know, approved for use by our infection control department. And so we all have, you know, masks to use. The cloth masks help to save on just our, you know, disposable masks. Those pretty much are reserved for the hospital setting or for, you know, the clinical setting. And then our PPE, like the actual PPE that will, you know, block viruses and things like that, is reserved just for, you know, our clinical people who actually have to deal with patients who may be positive, those types of things.
Yeah.
They have a lot stricter guidelines as far as, you know, what they have to wear, how they have to put it on, the order in which things are done, masks that are saved. They do sanitize the N95 masks. Everybody's kind of heard N95 is now. They do use those up to 3 times. They've, you know, they get sanitized between each day's use. So we have a UV light that they, you know, they go in that room and the UV light kind of cleans everything, kills any germs and things like that. And they've got a procedure for those types of things. Mine is obviously a little bit more relaxed just because we are in, you know, a different building, a different setting. No clinical people really are in our area. But we do mask. We wear masks. We're required to wear them anytime we're outside of our office. So if I was in my office, I could close my door. That's my space. I'm going to be in there. It's kind of understood that my germs are going to be in that room. So we're not required to wear masks in our own areas with doors closed. That's fine. But anytime we, you know, any movement to the restroom or to the break room to get water or those types of things, masks are required. So. And my department is very small. We have under 15 people, I would say, in my department. So that, I mean, we're taking all precautions to keep each other safe for sure.
Yeah, but it's probably a little easier to manage with this just a small group.
Yes, and then most people are working remotely. So even, you know, if I come in one day and then I may see maybe 3 people. So, you know, everybody else is working remotely. So, you know, that we just have a definitely a smaller crew that is in there. A few, like I said, a few of them come in regularly. My manager is in there, I would say 4 times a week, I would say at least, because she does a lot of the communications, the writing, and she knows, you know, all of the PR things. So she has to be aware of what's happening and be able to connect the press and, you know, when there's news interviews, those types of things, she jumps in on those. So she's in quite frequently. Yeah. As well as our director. He's attending all those meetings every day and those types of things. So
yeah,
they're very important to incident command. They kind of think of things, you know, they pose the question about, you know, how does the public react to this or what did they need to do? So it's good to have them there to kind of smooth things out.
Yeah. So once we get back to what is closer to what we see or we think of as normal, what are you looking forward to doing?
Well, my big project, I've been with the hospital for just over a year and a half. And never in my wildest dreams did I think that we would be, you know, going through this. That's for sure. My goal, even from when I started, was to redesign the website and to modernize it. So that's been an ongoing like process. I've taken steps toward that. I would say in February of this year, we got some new software tools to use to help, you know, facilitate that. And then COVID hit and it was kind of drop everything and take care of, you know, all of the COVID communications and things like that. So that is my goal. And I'm still working towards it when I can, but I don't have like the time to dedicate to that process yet. But that is definitely what I am looking forward to doing, is to, update the website that I inherited what was there. And so it'll be a lot easier once I have my new platform that it's on and it's designed to current standards and those types of things. It'll be a lot easier for me to maintain and to kind of do, you know, do the things that I want that would make a big impact to our, you know, display and things like that. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. That's been a project that's been on the docket for a while, but we've kind of taken months off.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun. I like having something to work towards.
Yeah. Yep. It's been the plan is to completely design and restructure. That's another part of it. We've got content that is great, but it could be in a mat, could be organized better, and so that's something I'm trying to work towards. It's a long process to begin with, just COVID or anything like that. Redesigning a website and to launch it and things like that is a process. It takes several months to, you know, get everything streamlined and, you know, the planning portion of it and development takes time. And so COVID is kind of the way things are right now. But
yeah,
eventually it'll happen.
I know it will. Well, thank you again for joining me. I'm going to stop the recording. And if you could just stay for 1 minute, I'll wrap up the final steps with you.
Sure, that sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.